Mr. Data, warp speed, please.
You've reached hour 5 on the Trekmate Polyvar.
And this evening, I have been joined by none other than the Trekkie girls, a.k.a. Sam and Carol. Hello, girls.
Hello.
Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm very, very well, thank you. Thank you for joining us for this episode review.
Thanks for inviting us again.
Thank you.
No, my pleasure. Now, you actually picked this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be talking about Captain's Holiday from TNG. So why did you pick this one in particular? I know you're big TNG fans. But why this episode in particular?
Well, first of all, we both love TNG. It's our favourite series.
Yes.
And we just thought, it'd be nice as it's a pod-a-thon to have a nice light-hearted episode. But also, Sam, just came back from holiday and had this moment of sat there by the pool, and I bought a hardback book. Just to feel like Picard did, sat there on his chair, and every time a waiter came up to me, I'd slam it shut and say, of course I want another drink. So, I that's sort of part of the reason I did it, but... Yeah,
I'm very excited because I'm going on holiday soon, so I'm kind of getting into
the you're getting into the riser spirit, are you?
Yeah.
Hope you get some Jamaica rum as well.
Well, you never know your luck. As long as you display that Horgon, then you never know how lucky you'll get.
We should take a Horgon,
shouldn't
we?
We should take one.
I've actually got to pick one of those up. I wonder if they'll have one of those at Star Trek London you can pick up.
So, if Roddenberry are there, they do sell them, but they're really expensive.
I bet they are.
I saw one a couple of years ago at a convention at a Roddenberry stand. I was like, I want this! And it was, it was about $500 or something.
Wow.
It is pretty nice.
You've got to really, really want your Maharon if you're going to pay $500.
You can get Umox for free of a Bajoran Vedic.
Excellent. Okay, so this episode is an interesting one, and it is a particular favourite of mine as well. It's a very interesting episode because Patrick Stewart or Jean-Luc Picard, he gets to do something a little bit different. He gets to come out of himself a lot more. And I was actually reading this up on Memory Alpha, and it was this came about because of a request from Patrick Stewart himself. He wanted more sex and shooting.
Oh, brilliant. Well, he certainly got that, didn't he? In fact, he's got a punching scene that is just awesome in this episode.
He is. He gets to do all sorts of action hero things, and it's not something he got to do a lot of, but... It was something that came up again in First Contact, where he went down the gym and he'd been in training, hadn't he? You could see he'd built up his guns a little. You could tell he'd really sort of prepared himself for an action movie.
Yeah, no, that's so right. You're right. You did get to see a different side of him, don't you? It's good to see.
Yeah, it's a nice episode for that, I think.
You bring sexy back to Picard.
Yes, absolutely.
Bring sexy back to Star Trek.
Okay, so this episode begins, and we see two aliens, a male and a female. They beam onto the surface of Riser. Now, I think this is the first time that Riser has been mentioned as a planet. I don't recall it being mentioned before in TNG.
That's a good one. I don't know. I think maybe it had been.
Do you think so? Yeah. I'd have to actually look that up, but it's certainly the first time we get to see Riser.
It's definitely the first time we see it, but I have some, I don't know whether it's true or not, I just have some niggly thing at the back of my head that Riker had mentioned it before.
I was thinking Riker, no beard.
Oh, well, if anyone's going to mention Riser, it would be Riker.
We'll look that up later. It'll be a little interesting thing for us to Google later.
Yes. So these two aliens arrive in this sort of hotel, and they ask it where Jean-Luc Picard is, and they say, well, he's not here yet, and they say, he will come. Arrive. Now, I really liked those aliens. They were called Vorgons.
With their gigantic pants.
Yes, the gigantic pants, and they had little transporter nodes in their head that they could just touch, and they could just beam in and out of places, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, they looked like they were wearing sort of upside down Romulan uniforms, I thought, you know, having the balderdash, whatever it part of it was.
The giant MC Hammer trousers.
Yeah. No risk of camel toes in that episode.
So then we cut to a scene, and the Enterprise is returning from a big diplomatic mission, and Picard is... sort of very stressed out. I think he's had a very, very tough time negotiating a peace treaty or whatever it is between these two races. And you can tell he's absolutely drained, he's worn out. And the crew basically conspire that to get him to go on a holiday, because he hasn't had a vacation in a long time. I don't know what they say, but he hasn't taken any shore leave. He hasn't been looking after himself too much. And they convince him that he does need a holiday.
I quite like the way they actually managed to get him to go as well. The final straw is the threat that Loaxana Troi might be coming on the ship.
Yes, we were hoping to meet up with her at a starbase. And he was like, you can see the look on his face. And he says to Riker, is everyone on the ship conspiring to send me on holiday? And he says, well, I think there's two ensigns on deck 39 who know nothing about it.
Yeah, that's it. And I just thought, I think that's brilliant. I think most people who... I don't know why there's something about Picard and and Mrs. Troy, it's kind of like a mother-in-law relationship. As soon as she's on the ship, he's off.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So, of course, Riker suggests Riser, and he's just... I just wouldn't even want to think about the things that Riker would get up to.
Oh, well, have you seen the Enterprise episode where they go there?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh.
You can just imagine what he would be like on that planet. Yeah. But then he says, if you're going to go to Riser, then see if you can pick me up just a small souvenir. And, of course, that's the Horgon.
The Horgon. He's a crafty little bastard.
He certainly, So Picard beams down to Riser, and he's kissed by a woman. Yes, by Vash. Now, this is one of only three episodes in which Vash turns up, but I really liked her as a character.
What do you think? As a character.
Yeah, she was. I think it's the way she wasn't your A-type Starfleet. She was human, but she was kind of ballsy and...
A bit of femme fatale type thing going on.
Yeah. Of course, you know, in TNG particularly, we're used to seeing humans as all being very straight-laced and very Starfleet. But she was something that little bit different, I think.
Yeah, she has sort of a naughty side to her.
Yeah.
A rule breaker.
Yeah. I mean, she kisses him and he's like, oh, you know, he looks all stiff and, you know, oh, I like to be, he says, I'm not seeking Jamaharon. And she says, well, it wasn't like I was asking you to, you know, I was offering to help you find it.
Yeah, that's a brilliant put down, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great one. Yeah.
The rejection in his eyes, it's like, oh, embarrassing.
Well, it's just that I usually like to be introduced to the women whom I kiss.
Again, not like Riker.
No. But then we see that Picard's he's sat there on the on a deck chair reading his book. He's taken some very heavy reading with him, from what I remember. And a Ferengi comes up to him, and of course you'll recognise this Ferengi. He's called Sovak, but of course he's played by none other than Max Grodinchik, who played Rom.
It's his first appearance in Star Trek.
I think it is. Yeah, obviously we had Armin Shimerman was in The Last Outpost early on at TNG, but I think this is the first appearance by Max Grodinchik.
Yeah, it's good to see him, and it's funny how he's sort of a Ferengi again, isn't he? It's sort of it's the same with Armin Shimerman, how he was a Ferengi and then carried on the look of a Ferengi.
Yeah, and of course the Ferengi here were very different in TNG than they were later portrayed in DS9. They were very much comedy characters in TNG, but indeed by the time you get to Deep Space Nine, we heard a lot more about their culture and they really fleshed them out a lot.
Yeah. But you always still got the Dumb and Dumber routine, don't you? There's always a smart one and a dumb one just for comedy value, which is good to see.
Yes, yes. So Vash reveals herself that she's a, I guess you'd call her, well, I think she calls herself an archaeologist, but she's really more of a, what would you call her, a treasure hunter or a...
She's more of an opportunist, isn't she, I think?
Yeah, she'll do anything she can to get hold of money. And they're searching for a device which is called the Tox Utat, which is a device from the 27th century which is capable of, I think they say it's capable of halting all nuclear reactions within a star, which is a pretty awesome device. Right. If you can suddenly switch off a star, that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, they're quite vague about its importance. It was a bit vague about the whole Tox Utat, aren't they? I found in the episode it was kind of like had to make something up.
Yeah, but the one, I mean, this is a particular favourite of mine, so I'm really glad that you chose to review this. But it reminds me very much of a sort of Indiana Jones or Maltese Falcon type episode where they've got this device or this artifact that they're looking for, but rather than it being something from the ancient past, it's actually something from the future.
Yeah, it's quite similar actually, isn't it? It's a bit of an adventure storyline.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I like it. It's just something very different for TNG.
Yeah, it's good. And also I like the sort of ties to the future as well. I always wondered whether there was going to be some connection, whether they pull that back in as they went to different time zones.
Yes. So next up, Sovak, otherwise known as Rom. manages to catch up with the two of them, and he's got this little data disk that Vash has managed to somehow destroy, but he's managed to retrieve some of the data from it, and he believes that he knows where the Toxutat is. Obviously, this is going to be a huge financial benefit to them, and him being a typical Ferengi wants to take the profit and take the woman.
Absolutely, and of course, Vash's motives are purely good and benevolent.
Okay. She wants the cash, and that's one of the things I like about her. She's not, like I said earlier, she's not one of your typical humans, and that's, oh no, we want to expand our knowledge, and I'm going to donate this to the Daystrom Institute. She's in this for the money.
Yeah, she's an opportunist. She wants the biggest, bestest suite in Riso, and she wants to stay there.
Yeah, absolutely, and who can blame her? This is a typical of Picard. So he's gone there on holiday, but he strikes me as one of those guys who can just never relax properly. I don't think he was ever comfortable just sitting by the pool reading his book. He wanted something. He wanted an adventure, didn't he? Always wanted some work.
I think that I relate to this episode because I'm that sort of person. I can't sit by the pool. If I'm on holiday, I have to be doing something. This would be my perfect holiday.
I'm the same, actually. I know when I go on holiday, I can sort of sit for a little bit and it's like, right, I'm bored now. I want to go and do something.
So you're looking for trouble.
Yes. It was just like, I just can't sit there and just do very, very little. It's just, okay, I just want to go off and see something or do something or walk about just because my mind is just too active.
Yeah.
And I think Picard is just the same.
I imagine the job he does, you know, away mission after away mission, you must strive the adventure. You must strive for the adventure. But at the same time, on holiday, you haven't quite got the rules and restrictions. So you don't have to write a big old lengthy report or a briefing or anything like that.
You can just go off and do something really cool and heroic and just enjoy it.
Yeah. So you can use all your skills you learnt from Starfleet to solve the mystery, but without the paperwork. Great.
So Vash and Picard, they go off and they're going to find this device, and I mean he loves this opportunity. I think
he loves the opportunity to go off with Vash, actually.
That's the thing. I mean we haven't seen many. This is around about towards the end of season 3, and we haven't seen a lot of Picard and women, but I always got the impression he was always very reserved, and we found out in Tapestry later that he was a bit of a womanizer, but I think Picard is a real ladies' man. What do you think about that?
I think it sort of goes with the territory of command. I think when in the episode where she comes back again, I can't remember the name of the episode, where...
Cupid,
yeah, they encounter Q.
Yeah.
And he's never mentioned her. I think he... If you look at the other women that he has been associated to, there was that astrophysics lady.
Nella Darren.
Nella Darren, yeah. And there've been a couple of others, but sort of in alternate universes, I suppose. They've all been very prim and proper, kind of reserved women themselves.
Mm. And if you look in Generations, where he goes into the Nexus, and the woman he has there... I mean, she is, it's like 19th century woman, isn't she? With the sort of hair all tied up. She looks like she's wearing a corset. And that's the sort of woman you would expect someone like
I think because Vash is so opposite to Picard, opposites do attract. Mm. And, you know, he sees something in her that is very attractive to him because she presses those buttons within him.
I think she challenges him, where some of the others don't as much. They seem to kind of, like you say, are quite reserved, might fall in line with him.
Almost like being submissive to him, but she's someone who will be able to fight him at his own game, as it were.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought it was a really good romance between Vash and Picard, and I think that was a real good challenge for him.
Of course, she does turn up later in DS9 as well, and I think... that's when O'Brien recognised her and says, oh, she was a friend of Captain Picard's.
So I think that's why maybe he didn't, he didn't talk about them, because he is very reserved and kept it secret. But I think he really enjoyed it. I think this suits his personality, and seeing the side of him in this episode is just, it's good entertainment for one thing. Mm. But it does help you feel softer towards Picard. You start seeing that old side of him from when he was in the academy and yeah, like you're saying, in Tapestry, where you see the other side of you and think, where did that come from? It helps the viewer identify the journey Picard's came from being this rebellious, crazy teenager and cadet to the sort of stiff upper lip.
Yes, yes, that sort of adventure he went on. Because remember, in Tapestry, he was very much a very rebellious and sort of very gung-ho young man.
Yeah, yeah. And if you think about how he was in the very first episode in Farpoint, you think, how did those two characters come along? And I think it's great that Patrick Stewart suggested like an episode like this, because you get to see the character development.
Yes, and as an actor, I guess he did want to do these sorts of episodes. He didn't want to be just stuck on the bridge all of the time, because that must be a very boring thing to have to shoot. This must have been a really interesting episode to shoot, just something different for an actor.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's been good fun.
So off they go. They're going off to find the Utat, and they camp out in a cave, and Picard and Vash. Now, you assume that they make love.
That is the Jim'Haron.
they find their own way to find Jim'Haron. I mean, it's never, you never see anything, of course, but they just sort of start kissing, and then it's suddenly the next morning, and you know, all of that has happened, and you think, wow, Picard, you know, you've got it in you after all.
I've got it. Yeah, okay. It's going to drop the tone a few levels then, but yeah, that was a bit of those, because it leaves lots to the imagination. Mm-hmm. And
it does, yeah. I guess it's time to make it family friendly.
Yeah. But, I mean, they're in a cave, for goodness sake. All those rocks.
And it wouldn't be very comfortable, would it? They only had these tiny little blankets on a stone floor, but yeah. There you go.
And...
So eventually, after this event happens, they do manage to find the Toxutat. The Vorgons materialise there, and they say, yeah, they're here to watch him find the Utat, and that they just want to observe and watch. But Vash goes mad and says that, you know, they'd stolen these notes from a professor who was searching for the Utat, and says that the Vorgons were trying to actually steal the device.
Naughty, naughty. Yeah, I don't know why Picard probably didn't. I mean, I know he'd heard the legend, maybe he got a bit excited about it, but you know, you think he'd ask questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're digging this large pit, trying to search for it, and they never actually find it, do they? So they're digging and digging for hours, digging this huge, like a grave almost, and that they never actually find the device.
No, it hasn't, Sovak, he's kind of watching them by now, isn't he?
He's there as well, and he's like, keep digging, he's desperate to find this device.
Yeah, and then brilliant moment where they kind of give up at the end, and like he carries on digging.
So the Vorgons are like, oh, this is all very odd, and off they beam with their little built-in head transporters, which I really do love. I think that's a brilliant
thing. It's pretty sweet, and it's, we do one of those.
So after this, they don't find the Utat, and they disappear to back to the resort. But of course, Jean-Luc has twigged exactly where Vash is on this.
Yeah, sussed.
He's got her well sussed out. So obviously she knew all along where the Utat was. And this disc, which had apparently been vaporized, she deliberately left it intact so that Sovak would find out where the Utat was meant to be hidden. But of course, before all of this, you know, Vash would have, of course, beamed down to Risa. She would have gone straight to the location and managed to find the device.
Yeah, Card solves the mystery, Sherlock Holmes style.
Yeah, elementary, my dear Data. Okay, so Vash admits that, yes, he is correct. And she opens up a Horgon and pulls out this little crystal thing, which looks very like a piece of cheap Perspex, to be honest. But this is the Utat, this all-powerful weapon. And he picks it up and has a look at it, and the Vorgons appear. And, you know, they're desperate to guess this, you know, to get hold of this device. But Picard says, no, they must prove who they are if they're going to take it, because this device doesn't belong in the 24th century. It belongs in the 27th. But, you know, they want to take it. He's not willing. And Picard beams up to the ship and says to initiate a code 14, with a 2-second delay, which I don't think we've heard code 14.
No, I'm the first I'm hearing that. I'm like, what's code 14? I should know that. But I'm guessing it's, new.
Yeah. So he drops down the UTAT and then legs it, and the UTAT then explodes. So code 14 is obviously blow stuff up, which I didn't know, I didn't know the transporter could do that, but there you go. It's a nice little plot device.
You've got to be careful with these things. I mean, how... He must have a memory of steel, because... Memory of steel, is that even a thing? But, I mean, I'd be there. I'd have to, Google it. I'd be like, right, I'm just going to check that's blow up the object, not blow me up or my comm badge
up.
Yes,
the code... Yeah, the difference between the code 14 and the code 15 could be quite significant.
Exactly. There's got to be really...
Well, he could have got it wrong.
Yeah.
code 15 could be beam me out of my clothes.
Yeah, could have got it wrong. You might be like, sugar puffs, I didn't mean to blow that up.
He has to keep the car mixed serious.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, that's what I meant to do.
So the UTAT explodes, and the Vorgons say that Picard has fulfilled his destiny and that the UTAT was in fact destroyed. So then off they beam off and say, that's it, history records that you destroyed the UTAT, and they're off. Now, I would think these guys are time travellers. Why didn't they just come back again?
They're fake. I didn't believe their story at all.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, they were terrorists, weren't they, I think, from the future, and they wanted to get the device for their own ends. But if they could travel through time, why didn't they just come back again and try again and again and again?
That's why I don't believe them. I think they're phonies. I reckon they were working for someone, maybe the Obsidian Order, maybe the Tau Shiar, I don't know. But either way, if they were from the future, they would have, as soon as something happens with time zones and time travel, tricorders pick up chronoton fluctuations. And
yes, tachyon fields and chronoton this and that, yeah.
That's why I think they were lying. But, what do I know? I didn't write the episode.
So then that's pretty much it for the episode. Picard's going to leave. And Vash says she's going to go off and explore planet. Was the race was the Sarthonians or something like that? And she says, no, you can't do that. They'll murder trespassers. But she's been that typical sort of rogue person. She's going to go off and do her own thing anyway.
It's almost like she said it to wind him up as well.
Yeah.
But he does manage to share a little kiss with her as she leaves.
Smoochie, smoochie. Yeah. He gets in a sneaky one before he beams up to that ship.
Yes. But of course, but he does give that little hint in the episode that, he said the Vorgons know where they are and where to look for the UTAT, and they may have to do this all over again. So you can imagine they could have turned this into a real one of those cause and effect type episodes where they have to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how many temporal anomalies there are in the universe like that right now where that just keeps happening.
Oh, well, who knows? Those could be everywhere. We could be doing all of this again and again and again and again, and we wouldn't know it. Yeah, we could well have done. We could. So Picard returns to the ship and, he's back. He's had a holiday, but it seems like he's probably only been away 2 or 3 days. Couldn't have been more than that. You would think he would have wanted a good month off. But maybe 2 or 3 days is enough for someone like Picard. That's it. He's all relaxed.
Was it when in Star Trek Insurrection where he has about 200 days holiday accrued or something?
Yeah, I mean, I get 28 days paid leave per year. So how can you possibly accumulate 200 days? I don't know how many standard days they get.
Maybe he took into account that episode Cause and Effect where they relive the same day over and over again.
Yeah, you can build that up. Yeah, okay, we'll adjust your annual leave because you've been stuck in a loop for, 60 or 70 days doing the same thing. But 200 days is a hell of a lot, isn't it?
I bet we should work that out. We could work out the time between this episode and the time between Insurrection. And work out what the average annual leave is for a Starfleet officer, or Starfleet captain, anyway.
Yeah, you do that and you tweet it for us.
I did that. I'm just sad enough to do that.
Okay, so he's returned to the ship and he's all rested, and Picard says to him, did you manage to pick up that thing? And he says, oh, yes, we need to have a little chat about that Horgon.
Actually, that's a really good line within the episode, isn't it, where... where it's the woman explains to him what a Horgon is, and she's like, is it for a friend? And he's like, you could say
yes.
That.
Oh, yes.
Lover?
Is someone special to you? Well, sort of. Yes. A lover? Well, not exactly, no.
Is it all go that far?
Really, yes, to display this means you are seeking Jamaharon, and he just covers it up with a towel. Yeah, to display it openly means you are seeking Jamaharon.
Yeah, he should have given it a try.
Yeah, he should have given it a go. Everyone else seems to, so.
There's that deep space where they go up there on Deep Space Nine, and Quark beams down, and he's got two of them in his hands, and as soon as he beams down, he starts shaking them around.
Shaking them like a pair of maracas, and running up to all of these Rycean women, saying, do you seek Jamaharon? Oh, yes, I do. I actually watched that episode very recently, because I'm going to a DS9 rewatch.
Oh,
so, yeah, that's... very late season 4. No, it's early season 5, I think.
Yeah, I think it must be season. It's just before Jadzia dies. So, yeah, it must be sort of season 5 sometime.
Yeah. So that's and of course, Riker just turns to Troy and says, oh, it just has this little sort of cheeky grin on his face and says, oh, I knew he'd have a great time.
Yeah. It's like they can just read his mind, can't they?
Yeah.
Yes. So we've covered that episode off fairly quickly, but. I do really like this one. It's full of, like I say, something very, very different. There's something very Indiana Jones and almost Maltese Falcon about it. And it's just a welcome diversion to a lot of the episodes we've had in season 3. And for me, with TNG, I mean, I love TNG. It's the series with which I grew up. I'm not 100% sure if it is my favorite series or not. I am a big Deep Space Nine fan, but I always do hold a special place for TNG. But for me, season 3 was where it started to really, really pick up and get very, very good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really, really like this episode. It's just something very different. It's got adventure. It's got a little bit of action in it. And it's just nice to see Captain Picard doing something that little bit different.
Yeah, entirely agree.
One of the few times you see him outside of his Starfleet uniform. His little pair of shorts and his little shirt on. And
he looks very good too.
sitting in the sun there.
he looks very good as well doing it.
So, what would you score this episode? So, here at Trekmate, we score episodes on a scale from 1 to 10 pips. So, could you give me your thoughts on the episode and give me a score, please?
Oh, well, what do you reckon, Carol?
I was thinking... 7, 8-ish.
Yeah. Oh, I think I was going 9 or 10.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
We do allow half scores.
So okay.
You can go for a 7.5 if you wish.
I'm thinking more towards 8, but I think I preferred when Vash came back again and they
oh,
kind
the
of
second
jumped.
Time.
Yeah. Because the chemistry or the crew.
Yeah, that worked
really well.
Yeah.
This does have a lot of fun elements.
That's it. And it was like it kind of paved the way for other fun episodes and sort of single character episodes.
If you're taking that, then I can see why you're going 9.
I'd go 9 myself. We can do 8.5 if you want.
Yeah, shall we say?
We'll do 8.5.
You're going to go for an 8.5. That's a very good score. I would probably. It's a tough one, this episode. I've seen this a lot, and it's really different. There's not a lot of what you would see traditionally in Trek, Starships, etc., but it's a really, really good, fun episode, and it's got a lot of nice references, like I said, to things like Indiana Jones, and to the sort of 1930s type serials or movies that you got. And just something very different, and a really, really nice character episode for Picard. It's got some really funny moments in it. You don't see a lot of the rest of the crew either, which is nice. You know, it is focused mainly around Jean-Luc himself.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably give this an 8.
Cool. Yeah, pretty close.
I think if you look at season 3, this is probably one of the top 5 episodes in that season, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree.
Yeah. So a very good score all round there. So
excellent.
Excellent.
And I also just looked up. I think this is the first. Oh no! Sorry. I don't know. I was just looking up whether this was the first reference, but I can't. It's definitely the first appearance, but I'm going to look into reference.
It's certainly the first time I remember it, but it might have been mentioned very vaguely in a previous episode.
Mm. I'll listen out. If anyone knows the answer, please let us know.
Yes, let us know. Let us know what that is. If there is, if you can find the first reference to Risa, then we'd love to hear it.
Excellent.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining me this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us. We really enjoyed it again.
Excellent.
And good luck with the rest of your podathon.
Thank you.
Currently, we're in a secret location. You're broadcasting this on the podathon, aren't you?
Yes.
It'll be public then. So yeah, we're currently in the south of France at the moment. So.
Oh, how nice!
It's a secret. We're taking our Trekkian training on our Hendu. She doesn't know.
Oh wow! Okay. That's an interesting place to go for a Hendu, south of France.
Yeah. Well, we're actually sort of going to spend a lot of time in Monte Carlo, so
You'll be at the Dabo wheel then.
At the Dabo wheel, yeah. So yeah, we'll try and tune in if we can at some point in the weekend. And
All of this will be recorded. All of the podathon will be recorded, and we will release it in probably 1 or 2 hour chunks.
Right.
So you will be able to check out all of those little bits, and we've got a lot of people joining us as well. So
brilliant.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of activity there.
No, listen out. Good luck.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Sam and Carol.
We hope you're enjoying all the Trek talk. If you are, then please show your support by visiting www.justgiving.com/teams/TrekMatePodathon. Every dollar, pound, euro, yen, rupee, whatever currency, makes a great difference. So please, dig deep and give what you can on the TrekMate Podathon. 24 hours of Starfleet fun. You're listening to the TrekMate Podathon. Please dig deep and visit www.justgiving.com/teams/TrekMatePodathon. That's justgiving.com/teams/TrekMatePodathon. And thanks.
And we're back.
Ah, lovely to hear the girls join you there, Mark.
Yes, unfortunately they couldn't join us live because they've swanned off to the south of France. But yeah, it was great to have them on the show nonetheless.
Yeah, no, we appreciate everybody's contribution. I think it's been going well so far.
No, I think it's held up very well. I think we've had the odd little echo here and there, but you've sort of come to expect that, I think, when I'm trying to do all of this stuff live. But no, it's going really well, I think. So I think everyone's enjoying it.
Yeah, I think so. So
it was nice to have that little half-hour break.
It was nice. Well, to be honest, didn't really step away from the PC for that long.
No, I went and grabbed some cereal, so that sort of perked me up a little bit. So
that was it for me. It was just another can of Relentless.
I've just got some more Lucozade here, so...
Yeah, so I suppose we might as well do a update. At the moment, so far, we've raised £600. So that's absolutely
pretty good
fantastic.
Going. Yeah, that's fantastic news.
Yeah, it is fantastic. Considering how early on we are in the podcast, that's pretty good going. So thank you all so much for helping out by donating. Remember, you can donate at... justgiving.com/teams/TrekMatePodathon.
Podathon.
Yeah, not podcast. Podathon. And you'll be able to select which charity you want to donate to there. And for anyone just joining in, our chosen charities are obviously, the Watford General Hospital Special Care Baby Unit, who do fantastic work day in and day out to ensure that there are like enough support and like for parents, as well as saving the lives of countless babies all the time, and helping out anybody that's had premature births or babies with defects or a number of things.
Yeah.
And they're just fantastic people. They're absolutely fantastic. And I, as I said, I owe them all the thanks in the world. And also, we're also supporting Amnesty International.
Yes, we are. And they're a charity, of course, who stand up for people's freedom and human rights, and are Star Trek fans. You know, we see the world of Star Trek, and in that world, everyone has equal rights and they have complete freedom. But unfortunately, we don't yet live in that world. So as Star Trek fans, I think we all aspire to live in that world. And Amnesty International are doing their bit to make sure that that is the case. So, yeah, please do dig deep and give us your money.
Yeah, we appreciate every penny that you can donate. So please make sure that you do that, and we'll be giving away more prizes as we go through the night. Seeing as Paul's not here, I suppose it's only right that we do give away some of his prizes.
Yes, yeah, I think so.
Oh, dear. Saying that, what prize do you reckon we should give away next? He did give me a list of everything
he's got. He gave me a list as well. Let me just check the email he sent me. Let's see what we've got.
Okay. Where is it? Tonight.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. So he's got his iPad, which we know. So if anyone isn't aware, person who gives the highest donation will receive a brand new iPad. He's got some Polaroid smartphones with dual SIM cards and expandable memory. He's got a little Polaroid tablet PC, a remote control Mini Cooper. We've already given away one of the two-cup coffee machines, but there is one more of those. And we do have, of course, one evening with the lovable Paul from Brace for Impact, females only. And they are requested, as he says in his email, they are requested to literally brace for impact. So, I don't hold out too much hope for that one. Sorry, Paul. Yeah, well, let's
see. You'll probably raise a lot more if you open it up to both sexes.
Maybe we'll leave Paul to auction that one off, shall we?
Yeah, I think we should. I think, but saying that, it would be funny just auctioning him off whilst he's not here.
That might be quite good fun, actually. We might have to do that later.
Yeah, definitely. We've got a few hours to go before he comes back. So
Tell you what, should we do the remote control Mini Cooper?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
So, if anyone would like a remote control Mini Cooper, then
donating.
Get donating. So that what did we do last time? The person who gives the next bid.
Last time we done the next person who the highest donator within the hour. So how about we do fastest fingers first? Whoever donates first with, what should we say, there's got to be a minimum amount, not £1. Should we say, £10 donation?
Yeah, £10 donation. I think that's probably worth it for a remote control Mini Cooper.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Remember, you're giving to charity, so they're going to make the most of every penny that you manage to donate to us. And that way you also get to have a bit of fun with your new Mini Cooper. So, as Tom Badley said, vroom vroom.
Vroom vroom, yeah. So the first person to donate £10 will win that prize.
And please make sure that you do put your name on the donation, otherwise we don't know who it is.
Yes.
It was a bugger to work it out last time, but I managed to figure it out. But still, so make sure you do that. And still, I suppose after that, How about we stop by and see how Rick's getting on with his latest song? I have added the files, I think. Mark, let me just see. No, I haven't actually. Let's talk for a minute.
Okay, you're going to add the files in. Okay, you're going to put them in Music Hour bumpers or in bumpers?
Yeah, it was Music Hour bumpers.
Okay.
Oh, the love of being live. It just means it gets to show up how often I turn around and go, oh, crap, sorry, Mark.
Yeah, I haven't done that. Yeah. Hang on a minute.
Oh, dear. So, yeah. So, what have we got coming up, Mark?
So, next up at 1, we have a discussion with Trek Companion about the new movie and possibilities for a future series.
Which should be a very fun chat. So, definitely, I'm looking forward to that. Oh, we've just had a donation.
Okay, excellent.
We've just had a donation. Let's find out who it was. That was for £10.
Yep.
Donate to the Watford General Hospital Special Care Baby Unit, who has won it. Rico Dosti. So, thank you very much, Rico. You have won a Mini Cooper.
Well done.
Yeah, very so well done, my friend.
Yeah, so if you send over your address details to trekmate1701@gmail.com, then we'll get that sorted out for you and get that in the post.
Yes, so and then you'll be able to whiz your Mini Cooper around, sharing fond memories of your night of listening to a bunch of English guys talking about Star Trek.
Yes.
Oh, dear. So, I think that file is with you now, Mark.
Is that hour 6?
Yes, it is.
Should we play that now?
Yeah, so let's. For anybody who hasn't remembered what's been going on, Rick Moyer, who runs StarTrekParodies.com, has created a brand new Star Trek parody and has gave us an exclusive on how things run behind the scenes for him. So here is our second segment, and it's on the build-up to revealing to the world his brand new Star Trek parody song. So, let's give it a listen.
Let's see how he's getting on.
And now, from the west coast of the United States of America, in the studios of Boyer Multimedia, the founder and creator of StarTrekParodies.com, musician and voiceover artist Rick Moyer.
I'm back.
Well, here we go. You know, the rest of my family's in the house doing all sorts of different stuff. But right now I'm sitting here writing lyrics for the Party Spock anthem, which is a little more difficult than I thought it would be. I don't know why. It's just, I guess because they crowd a bunch of words into it. You know, the normal words are pretty. Actually, I've never really read the normal words till just now. And I'm going, ew. Kind of nasty, but we're changing that around a little bit. We're going to Starfleetify it. Fleetify? Is that a word, Starfleetify? I don't know. So far we have for the chorus, Party Spock is on the ship tonight. Everybody have a logical time, and he's going to make you use your mind. Everybody make the Vulcan sign. Party Spock is on the ship tonight. Everybody have a logical time, and he's going to make you use your mind. He just wants to hear you quote stats. And then, you know, bop, 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 bop. All right, so it gets into the rap thing, and they start, like, in the club, party rock, looking for you, girl. She's on, well, I won't tell you what he says. It's kind of gross. But in this particular one, I thought, let me see, what should we do? Okay, I think about the character that we're covering. It's Spock. All the different things about Spock that makes him unique. He always has the blue uniform. He's tall and skinny. He wears the black boots. He's got pointy ears. He's green in tint. He's logical. He uses a tricorder. He looks into that little thing on his science station that always glows blue on his eyes. There's a lot of different things. So that's what we're going to use to rhyme here. And let's see. How about Let me see. It goes, in the club, party rock, looking for you girls. So how about, in the blue, party Spock, looking for his light, that geeky jock. That works. Nonstop, GPS the spot. Chekhov sets a course like it's all he's got. His skin is green in any light. Tight shirt, brows cocked to the left and right. Half folk and half human, too much to foster. Peace, long life, live long and prosper. I think that'll work. Yo! Oh, now the fun part. Let me see. I'm running through these hoes like Drano. What a nice line that the Party Rock folks have written there. Let's just change that a little bit. How about, I'm running through these corridors on fire, hanging with Kirk homie. No, I can't be a liar. We party Spock. Yeah, that's the crew I'm serving. Let's fly the Enterprise now. Stop that swerving. Hey, that works. That's all I got so far. So I just need to do some more because it's difficult at best. But we're getting the progress here. It's getting some progress. I'll be back next time with doing some of the background vocals so you can hear how I do that. But in the meantime, just rock on, my fellow Trekkers, Trekkies, Trekkers, Trekkies. I'm a Trekkie. Yeah. And visit StarTrekParodies.com. And we'll be back. We'll be back. There's only one of me. I'll be back a little bit later in the pod-a-thon. Trekmate, you guys are awesome. Thanks for doing this awesome, awesome, awesome thing. Hope we're raising lots of money for charity. How cool is that? Okay, be back in a while. Bye.
I'm getting something on the distress channel.
Make it so. Make it so. Make it so. Make it so.